relationships, religion, reality. This is the good news on Glenn Klein Online.
Take no big thing to wear for the battery. Take no big thing the toll of the bell. I prohibited the spare for days. I troll downtown, the red light plays. In store, love is the drug, and I need to score. Showing up, showing up, hit them run. Boy meets girl, where the beat goes on. Stitched up tight, can't she be? Love is the drug, got a hook on me.
You beautiful humans, this is Glenn Klein Online. It is hump day, Wednesday, September 19th, 2012. The only September 19th, 2012 in the history of humanity. And now, ladies and gentlemen, buckle in. It's time for Chris Harrington's reality. Yes, we meet each time this week so that you can listen to Glenn get his ass kicked. It's a really a fun time as we venture in to Chris Harrington's reality.
That's one way to put it.
Yeah, that is. Welcome in, you guys. Glad to have you along for the ride. Like I said, buckle it up. Sean is in studio. We're going to take your calls tonight. If you so desire to venture in at 1-800-436-3260, that is the Glenn Klein Online toll-free hotline. 1-800-436-3260, toll-free all over North America. Or if you're listening around the planet and it's a couple of minutes after 9 o'clock on Wednesday night, you can call, too, at 813-425-5773.
All right, how you doing this evening?
Fair to partly cloudy.
I hear that.
Before we get going in earnest, I want to encourage everybody to go to gospelrevolution.com as the Gospel Revolution is in week number two of their pledge drive, and all the specifics are on the website. Also, a major push happening to try to help promote Mike's book, One, The Gospel According to Mike. And all the information's there. Also, Michael will be in, I want to say, Alabama, at the end of this month. And again, all the information's about the upcoming meetings. I know Mike is going to my old stomping grounds of Marshfield, Wisconsin, to be with the medicine man, Pep Washburn, and Doug Meisner, and Shane Wendorsky, and many beautiful humans up there. Also going to have a couple of meetings in Janesville, the hometown of the vice presidential candidate, Paul Ryan, for the Republican Party. So that should be a good time. So just stay apprised of all the situations there at gospelrevolution.com.
All righty.
All right. So as some of you guys may have seen on Facebook earlier this evening, I had a pretty significant family event last night. My daughter, Gracie, you guys have heard me talk about her before. She is number six of six in our family, the only adopted child that we have. She's going to be 16 in 8 days. We got her at birth. Her birth mom was a crack and heroin addict during Gracie's gestation period, the development in her womb. And we raised her as best we could in a very similar atmosphere, and by and large a similar atmosphere, although we were in Christianity for some of the initial years of our older kids. But, I mean, this same dynamic, but obviously different gene pool. And last night, Gracie was arrested. And she'd been going this way. Chris and I have been talking about her for a little bit now, and he's been giving me some great insight, as Chris has had a lot of experience with troubled teens, being the 30-year veteran of high school that he is, and some very good advice. And so I called after this arrest occurred, and I won't go into the specifics of what happened in the arrest. It doesn't really make a difference. It involved violence. And she needed to be arrested. I mean, she was literally crying out for this. And so off she goes. We do the court today. She was in custody for about 24 hours, and I got her out of there later this afternoon. But last night I was talking to Chris, and Chris, we talked a little bit about it, and then relatively soon, after we started talking about Gracie's situation, you turned the whole discussion back on me, didn't you?
Yep. Yeah, it's pretty easy to get all into other people's issues and problems and develop all kinds of wonderful theories and stuff and intellectualize it, but it's very difficult to apply that to ourselves and really implement what it is that we're, you know, pontificating about. We want to be able to advise others, but we somehow don't want to take that advice ourselves. And when you see someone else drowning or going through problems, and you can enumerate how they got there and why they're there and what will probably happen to them and how it's all going, and yet you're facing those same things yourself, it's time to take a good look and ask yourself if you can learn from that situation and apply it to yourself. So I asked that musical question: is this metaphor working for you? That this young girl is having these problems? Do you in any way see that that's a part of your life, or is it a reflection of you?
All right. So now this is a very unique situation, you guys, because most families that have six children don't have five from the couple, the mother and father, and then one adopted. Yes. We do. And but I got to ask you, though, bro, right off the get-go here.
Sure.
I was a little traumatized last night and certainly hurting on some level. Why did you make a decision, or why did you choose to turn it back on me in that moment?
Mainly because of the amount of displacement that you allow into your life. You know, you're having your own issues right now. You really need to be able to attend to yourself. And here comes someone else with a problem. It would be very easy for you to avoid dealing with all your own issues and say, you know what, I've got to drop all that. I can't worry about that right now. I'm going to have to go over here and deal with this kid. But the reality is that there's always going to be something, all right? So just like she's having a major coronary bladder attack about getting all these things going on and why it has to be that way, the exact same thing could happen in a New York minute. You got to drop what you're doing, and you can't really attend to that, and you can't really stay on schedule, and you can't get your list going because you've got to deal with Gracie. And then she becomes an excuse. So what I challenged you with was whether or not you could allow her to go through her process and actually do what it is that's happening to you, which is learn from this so that she could adopt a reasonable response to the trouble that's in her life, taking responsibility for her part of it, and then trying to mitigate the things that happen to us, because all of us have crap happen in our lives. But we've got to take the stance that, you know, we deal with stuff and we respond to it, and instead of reacting all the time, we're going to take responsibility and we're going to initiate doing something about it, something positive.
There's so much that I want to ask you about.
Sure.
That comment, because you're what was that?
Personal thing.
What was it?
I moved a little wooden chair on the floor.
Oh, it sounded like you might have been having a little bowel issue.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, we just want to clear that up, you guys.
Yeah. Just go ahead and knock it out.
Okay. The tendency there would be to, you know, any decent parent would be to want to blame themselves, their own actions, their own behaviors, their own
Sure.
Predilections.
You could ask the question, how much power do you have in this child's life?
Right. But here's, in our situation,
yeah.
I've got five other examples.
Right.
And while they nobody's perfect, we've got five who are all legally adults. They're 26 through 18. They're
right.
all pretty, you know, efficient, positive contributors to society.
Sure.
Gracie, not so much.
That's right.
All right. So why should I take this one, other than learning from it, which, you know, I hear that.
Right.
But blame my own lack. If I blame my own lack in her life, then do I get some credit for these other kids doing well?
Well, see, that's the deal. If we could get back to the gospel for a second, instead of taking either credit or blame, we can say this is what is and this is how it rolls, and we can respond to it as it is. So with your other five kids, they maybe needed more or less support and got what they needed to more or less a degree. And Gracie needs a tremendous amount of support, mainly because she's blindsided in a lot of ways to the social issues that she's facing. You know, she's not facing her responsibility in citizenship in your family and in school and in the world. And so she's hoping through magical thinking that somehow this is just going to turn out for her. But the issue is, you know, who's going to foot the bill for all of your piercings and all of your tattoos and all of your alcohol and all the stuff that you do in your life? Who's going to fit the bill? Who's going to foot the bill for that? And eventually, it's going to get down to when your friends run out of couches and their parents are tired of putting up with you. Somewhere down the road, it's going to be you on the street. And so she's a minor right now, and you have some legal responsibility, but at the same time, you have also a duty as a parent to make sure that you allow her to feel the full brunt of her responsibility to herself.
Right.
And that's tough. Tough love is exactly that. It's tough for a reason.
Well, we've talked a lot about her unique situation. Obviously, everybody's situation
yeah.
is unique. But for those, whether they have adopted children or were adopted themselves or were not adopted, but they
sure.
have struggled, if we can just for a moment get away from this specific situation, but by using it,
sure.
Talk to the beautiful humans, Chris, about the possibility of what might have occurred in people's lives when they were even conceived, or certainly during the development phase
sure.
inside the womb, and maybe that in and of itself is the pivotal issue.
Right, and you know, this is not a lost metaphor on the whole nation by virtue of the fact that we have a group of people who have been living generationally on welfare, and now with welfare reform on the horizon, the question is, what do we do? Just dump these people off? Are we going to give them training? How are we going to deal with that? How are we going to segue from their social immaturity into their having ownership in the clan of citizens?
All right. Well, now
right.
You, yes, but this is obviously a hot topic right now.
Oh, absolutely.
But I think,
use this metaphor, and I think it operates in a fairly simple segue.
Right, but
you know,
I think
see a parallel.
So do I, but I think that the typical listener around the planet
sure.
Who doesn't know you might
yeah.
think that that is a Republican talking point or a conservative talking point, and you're
well,
about
I'm
an,
neither,
and,
I'm neither a Republican nor a liberal of any kind. You know, for me, what it gets down to is, what is it that's effective thinking? And I don't care where it comes from or who it is that's talking. And when they leave effective thinking, then I'm done with that part of it. So, you know, there are certainly ideas coming from everybody. I want to listen to everybody because somebody is bound to have a brilliant idea, and it could be anybody at any time. So I don't want to be out of the conversation when that happens.
All right, so use the we're talking about welfare reform, although
yeah.
it might
but
be
we're
going
talking
to,
about Gracie, and I just want to say, I just want to make the literary allusion to the fact that this operates on many different levels. But you wanted me to enumerate the things that happen when we're talking about when a person is genetically formed from in the womb, and we talked about this before. And for me, the way I've looked at it is that at the moment of conception, all right, the emotional wherewithal of the two people who come together in the moment of conception, everything that's charged genetically, but also hormonally in terms of their enzymes and all the biochemical bath that they have going at that moment, a loving relationship is more likely to create a loving progeny.
Right.
And I think genetically we could say that everything that comes to bear in that moment, from the environment to the toxicity of the food that they eat the previous day, everything could come to bear in the soup, the genetic soup that creates that human being at that moment.
And we know because of our understanding of using my youngest daughter as an example here,
yeah,
that her conception was not in a loving moment. It was her genetic soup was full of chemicals and drugs and
absolutely,
you know, just things that ought not be part of. All right, so
right. So she's challenged genetically and biochemically from the very beginning. So, you know, some people would say, well, that's two strikes against her. She hardly has a shot.
Yes.
On the other side, the job that I had for 33 years was working with kids just like that on so many different levels in an entire array and variety of human beings that had troubles that were of that magnitude. And what I found out was that by listening to people and allowing them to be themselves and not shaming them, in other words, applying the gospel to people, that what happened was you ended up with people being able to use the talents that they have and live with their faults and understand that, you know, this is the way that God makes us. You know, we've got all these different things. I don't care who you are, you've got a problem. It's anything from color blindedness to ADD or ADHD. There are plenty of people. There's a huge amount of talk right now about people who are psychopaths that are major leaders. And the thing is it takes a certain kind of personality to want to be the top dog. So if you start looking at humanity and look for a normal or average or whatever, you're going to find an average among human beings as some sort of like, it's a ghost. You know, it's like movies from the 50s or TV from the 50s. Those, that never really existed, Father Knows Best and all that stuff. It never existed. It was an ideal. And so there's an ideal American maybe, but as far as there being someone who fits that bill, you know, Captain America, whatnot, it doesn't really stand scrutiny. And so we need to allow that people are, they're emotionally famished, they're overburdening, they're contradictory, they've got all kinds of millions of problems, and nevertheless, all worthy. And so how do we then effectively challenge this girl to be able to take the genetics that she's got with the disposition that she has and the predilections towards whatever predisposition that she has towards self-destruction and turn that around so that we can make use of those talents? And that's a huge challenge for everybody who gets to meet her.
You know, you mentioned just very quickly there in a description, you said all worthy.
Yeah.
And you guys, some of you I know that are listening are not familiar with the gospel, the actual gospel, not the gospel of Christianity. The so-called gospel of Christianity is really anti-Christ. It's really anti-Christian or anti-gospel. But I think almost you could encapsulize the entire concept of the gospel in those two words, all worthy.
Yeah.
And how do you get that across? Now, I've been immersed in this. You talk about a bath, a genetic bath. What a great term. But I've been literally taking a bath in this gospel for, you know, well over a decade. It's had a tremendous impact on my soul to the point where I suppose part of the reason that I am desirous and willing to do this type of work on the radio is because I do have a great sense of my worth. And it's not based on me. It's based on the finished work at Golgotha, conceptually.
Right.
But how do you get that across to a person that has no interest, no clue, no background, no matter how much you talk to her, no matter how much you mention it to her, there's absolutely no light comes on with the concept that she is or he is all worthy?
Well, you know, I think that sometimes we think that we have to bring people along. You know, that's a very Christian concept. And yet Christ said that the kingdom of God was within us. And so to me, it's instead of a state of transference or maybe a trajectory of travel, it's more a recovery or an uncovering or a discovering. You know, philosophically, people talk about being and becoming and understanding that who you are is in some ways becoming a greater and greater approximation of the real you every day as you strip away your defense mechanisms and as you learn with maturity and understanding and wisdom and a holistic humanity, a humbleness about yourself and an awakening of just how interdependent we all are. As all that stuff unfolds, you go, wow, you know, it's really amazing. You're here and I'm here and this is all going on and it's fantastic. Instead of going, what's on sale? You know, but we've got the clouded image of what it means to be human, and we need to, as Kelly Oliver says, we need to get back to what it means to be human. You know, redefining our humanity is the subject matter of the 21st century.
And how would you redefine our humanity?
Well, I think we have to start with looking at everything as being an abstraction. You know, society is an abstraction. Nations are an abstraction. The whole idea of gender and gender preference and identification with everything from sports to brand names, those are all abstractions. You know, if you were on a desert island like Castaway, you might still have your little ball, Wilson, but other than that, he had to make everything himself. There were no identifications with anything. He was down to his humanity. And I don't mean that we need to go back to the caves. A lot of people will say, oh, you just want me to be a caveman. But I think there's a caveman mentality that we could adopt, and that is that we've got to stay focused on the fact that all these things are abstractions. They're not really real. You know, whether or not you're physically attractive in the way that Wall Street wants you to be in order to sell your body and middle manage your image in order to be able to make money off of you. There are all these different things that people do, but besides all the mind games that we play, when you get down to it, the image I love the best is in Independence Day, where you have Will Smith going up in the spaceship and blowing the aliens smooth away. The whole planet, you know, even people that probably didn't even like blacks, KKK guys were probably on the front line going, yeah, man, blow him up. They didn't care that he was black. You know, radical female separatists, they didn't care that he was male. Anybody on the planet who looked at that guy said he represents our best chance for survival. And we have forgotten that message, that each one of the people around us, they all hold the key, the seed to our understanding, if only we'll take a moment and listen to them.
Redefining humanity as one. What a good name for a book, by the way. And that's the deal with you guys. Did you just lop KKK and radical female separatists in the same little mosh pit?
Yeah, in terms of radical maneuvers and people who are willing to separate themselves. And that happens at every level. You know, it happens every time that you mention race. It happens every time that you mention a team. It happens every time you mention politics or economics.
Or a country.
Every time you use a dollar, it's the same thing. So in terms of using, you know, classic examples of separating things out, you know, those people in and of themselves are seen as classic or stereotypic separators. But if you look beyond that, what you'll find is that this is the case for every human being. In fact, the way that it's discussed philosophically is I and other. As soon as you get rid of otherness, then everything's in peace. It's the otherness that's the problem. And for me, that's the whole basis of how you see even sin, for example. As soon as there's God and then there's something else, that something else is an abstraction away from God. So if you're not thinking about God, you're thinking about an abstraction, thinking about something other than God. So it's God or whatever else. And so in order to be at peace with yourself, you have to be able to remember that these things are abstractions and that you keep in mind that there's the reality that's beyond words is, in fact, that peace that's beyond understanding.
The concept of us being separated, into countries, into political parties, into factions, into teams, as you said. I mean, it's really a joke when you come right down to it.
It's a cruel joke.
Now, you mentioned that earlier on at the beginning of the webcast that to try to have, and I'm paraphrasing here, a predisposition of trying to figure out where people are at in order to present your case.
Sure.
Now, you may have noticed that I did not jump on that because that was a major little discussion that we were having here on this Wednesday night. Well, that wasn't actually on the webcast, but it caused the webcast to evolve significantly.
Yeah. I think that it's interesting that in some ways she mirrors your own personality. So she might not be your blood relative per se, and it might be just incidental in the universe, although I doubt it, since I don't believe in accidents, that she's a person who has these predispositions in the same way that you do.
All right. Well, hold on for a second. I don't agree with that statement.
I know you don't, and that's the thing. Plausible deniability is the first defense of someone who's guilty of it.
That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about that you said where you said you don't believe in accidents. Or accidents or chance? Because
I don't believe in it.
I know you don't, but you know I do. So, but when we come back, we're going to dive in head first.
Oh, good.
And I'm just going to give Chris the rudder, if you will, because I mean you just heard what he said. Plausible deniability.
Yeah.
And I'm trying to be as undeniable as possible.
You're a good man.
When we come back right here on the oh, my God, I almost said the Gospel Revolution webcast. Sean almost smiled. This is the good news on Glenn Klein Online.
All right.
The good news on Glenn Klein Online is brought to you in part by the Guru of Gratitude.com. The Guru of Gratitude.com. Make money being nice. This song has got to be 40 years old. We're still talking about Egypt and Israel. We're talking about gratitude. It is the Guru of Gratitude.com. Make money being nice. 888-493-7482. That's the number to call. Toll free. The Guru of Gratitude.com. 888-493-7482. It's all about the love, ladies and gentlemen, at the end of the day.
It is.
Yep. All right. Take it away.
Okay. So I'm going to have to call myself a radical inclusionist. How about that?
A radical inclusionist.
A radical inclusionist, yeah. I often sign off things online, all skate. You know, when you go into the skating rink and there'd be at the end, no matter who they had separated out at whatever point, you know, only girls skate, only guys skate, only couples skate, whatever. Then they'd say all skate, and then everybody got to go back on board.
And,
right?
And the place goes absolutely crazy at that point.
And they go nuts, that's right. So I'm a radical inclusionist. I say all skate.
All skate.
All skate. So we were talking the last couple weeks, several things. What I'd like to do is summarize what we've done and maybe predict ahead where we could go. How about that?
All right.
All right, so the first move I made on the chessboard was to get rid of morality, good and bad, just get rid of that stuff completely, and think about things in terms of effective relationships. The reason I did that is because I don't think that people can be good. I don't think they can be bad either. I think what they can do is make ineffective choices or effective choices. But even those are fairly temporary, and you'll get over it, and time passes, and you go on about your business. So instead of being attached to it, I take the Buddhist stance. Just detach from all that stuff. It's all a distraction. All righty?
Yes.
Second move was to make a to-do list and see what you're capable of. Set a baseline. And so I asked you to make a to-do list, and you were like, eh, not so confident with that. Sounds like I have a million things to do, and if I make a list that's long enough to actually handle all the things I need to do, I'll never get finished making the list, so it's a waste of time to get started, right?
All right, that's one way of saying it, yes.
Yeah. So then I encourage you to make a much smaller list, right?
Yes.
And then eventually we got down to asking better questions and getting better answers that way. We talked about the marbles in the swimming pool, and that is if you keep asking the same questions, it's like always selecting only orange marbles from a swimming pool that's filled with marbles. And you end up thinking in your mind, your projection, your thought, your intuition, your total understanding is that the swimming pool must have been filled with orange marbles. When in fact, those are just the ones you saw.
And that's what you're focused on.
Yeah, that's what you're focused on. So you got a selective memory or selective hearing, right? And that can, in fact, fixate your mind on a certain track of thinking such that you don't really know what's going on. You lose track of reality. And it's a way of in fact, that's how camouflage works. You know, or magic. If I can keep you from thinking about what it is I'm actually doing, I can fool you. It's a con job.
Right.
Animals do it to each other all the time. Human beings do it to each other all the time, right?
Yep.
All right, number four, if the load's too heavy, you try a lighter load. And so we came back on the list because you had a high failure rate,
correct,
right?
Correct.
I couldn't do it, man. I was like 2 for 5 or something like that. And then some of the things on the list, I just didn't get to them and whatnot, you know. But what you found when you lowered the bar was that you could eventually do everything on the list. And in fact, felt pretty good. Even though it might not have been the most earth-shattering stuff you could possibly have gotten done.
Dude, you said last week, and I forgot about it till I re-listened to the show from last week.
Yeah.
You said making the list could be one of the 5 things on the list.
That's right.
That it's been on my list every day, making the list.
Make a list, that's right. Is that great or what? That gives you only 4 more things to do.
It's a beautiful thing.
Yeah. So, number 5, then, is to actually hold yourself accountable. Now, that's a tough thing. But if you look at your list and you go, I got that list done, you can say, I did it.
Right.
If the list is too tough and you hold yourself accountable, then you say, I'm a failure.
Yes.
So it has to be something that you can do. The problem is, eventually, is that we don't challenge ourselves enough. Now, if you sit on the couch and you say, I'm going to challenge myself to eat 5 Doritos today, okay? That's my challenge. That's on your list, 5 Doritos. And you do that every day for a year, you're not going to be able to get up off the couch because that didn't really challenge your entire body. That didn't challenge you financially, didn't challenge you mentally, emotionally, psychologically.
Actually, that could be the list of 5. I'll eat 1 Dorito.
There you go.
Times 5.
That's right.
That could be the list right there.
That could be.
Yeah.
And that's your list.
I like that list.
Now, the thing about holding yourself accountable is that you end up with a product from that, right?
Yes.
Now, is that then the product that you want? Because where we started this whole thing was that you didn't like the answers to the questions that you got, right? So I said, let's challenge the questions that you're asking. If the list is not challenging you, pretty soon that'll tell you that. You know, maybe I should eat other things. I have like stage 4, whatever it is. and it's really taken me down. I wonder if I should change my diet. Well, at the point when you have a heart attack, most people go, a lean meat, you know, not so much mayonnaise, and, you know, they start making changes right off the bat because their mortality kicks in. I'm challenging you to not wait that long. Don't wait until you're on the street. Don't wait until people have completely discounted you. Don't wait until everyone's tossed you out the door and there's not a couch to be able to sleep on. All right?
Yes.
That's the challenge. So, number six, do not worry about what other people do or have done, but rather how they will react or respond to what you do. And even then, only be concerned. All right? Mm-hmm. Now, I've heard people say, I don't care what he thinks. Mm-hmm. Oh, that's true. I hear that. That's why you're talking loudly enough for him to be able to hear you. Mm-hmm. You know, it's back to that old concept that we were talking about in the very beginning. It's a challenge to understand how people can say that they have a bad memory. If they really had a bad memory, they wouldn't be able to remember that they have a bad memory. Can't be that bad.
Yeah, that just makes too much sense right there.
Yeah, it makes too much sense. And so you've got these things like a hot water heater. If the water's already hot, you don't need to heat it. Tuna fish. Why say tuna? What are you going to be, tuna guitar? Tuna guitar sandwich. I don't think so. So it seems redundant. Yeah, I mean, you like word games. And the thing is that you're really, really good at it. So much so that you like to play, I can find the defect. I can find the one that doesn't match. I can find the hole in your theory. I can find the scratch on the Ferrari. And pretty soon you've talked people out of actually keeping their focus, and you've re-engineered things so that it gets off track, and the next thing you know, the whole deal is upside down. And you do that to yourself a lot. You get fooled a lot by some of the deals that you get into. And it's an easy thing to do, you know. You forget that there are sharks out there. I'll tell you a story about my dad. My dad really loved to go to bars. Not that he drank, but he liked to go to bars because they would always have this big brandy snifter. And the brandy snifter would be to collect the cards, and it would be a trick, a marketing scheme to be able to get people back in on Friday to see if they'd won a free drink, right?
Right.
But Dad, on the way out, would take his hand and put it into the brandy snifter, and he would pull out 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 10 cards, whatever, and he'd put them in his pocket. And then he'd walk outside, and he would get on the telephone. Usually he'd bum a quarter from somebody, and he'd say, man, I need to call home. Have you got a quarter? I'm completely out of change. And they'd front him a quarter. He's never going to pay it back anyway. So he got a free phone call, and he would call up the guy on the business card. He'd say, hey, man, I was talking to your friend Bill, kind of a short, tall, skinny, fat guy with balding hip. He's got brown. He's got, yeah, that's right. Jay, that's it. He said that you have a fax machine and that your secretary would be willing to accommodate me at lunch tomorrow. I just need to file some things and get some work done. Oh, awesome. Yeah, that's great. So then he'd go the next day and he'd hook up with the secretary and take her to lunch, and he's having lunch with some girl. And then he would, you know, borrow the fax machine, and he would, like, you know, order up 1,000 pizzas or whatever was on his mind. Maybe T-shirts that said Jesus loves you or something like that. And then he would build a company, and then he would, like, you know, run up the phone bill, and he'd walk out the door. And I said, Dad, why did you do stuff like that? He said, I'm God's little reminder that you shouldn't just trust everybody.
Dude.
Hold on
for a second.
Yeah.
Is that a true story?
True story.
Wow.
True story.
Your dad was a...
One time he showed up at my house with a Winnebago, and a guy was driving it. He said he was he just wanted to see how well the Winnebago ran. But in reality, he was just getting a ride out to my house.
Do you ever hear of the guy named Jerry Weintraub?
Oh, yeah.
You got to read his book, because It sounds like your dad on steroids. Jerry Weintraub, you guys, is a famous rock and roll promoter. He was Led Zeppelin and Elvis Presley and John Denver. I think he was the Carpenters and Frank Sinatra. I mean, he had all these guys. And he just made up one story after lies.
Sure.
He just lied his way to be a multi-millionaire.
Yeah.
And he wrote a book about it. The book, Jerry Weintraub, he's still alive. The book is called You'll Know I'm Dead When I Stop Talking.
Yep, well, Dad's no longer talking.
Dude, your dad's not talking, but Jerry Weintraub is still talking, and he got away with it.
Yeah, my dad got away with it for a long time. He did go to jail a lot. He was in lockdown a lot. But, you know, God love him. He was still worthy, right?
He was all worthy.
Yeah. So I want to get to this seventh one, though.
All right?
Because this is going to be the kicker. It's down the road. We're not even close to there yet, but this is where I want to head. I'm projecting that this is going to be our piece of non-resistance, okay? Number seven, decide on a failure rate that you can live with, somewhere between 0 and 100%. Now, 100% failure is, that's no good, right?
Right.
But 0% failure
is impossible.
That's legalism in a nutshell, is it not?
Well, I wouldn't call it legalism. But
legalism calls for 0% failure. I know that it's hypocritical, but what I'm saying is it calls for it, and it makes people psychotic, does it not?
Right, and it makes people psychotic, and it is, of course, completely unrealistic.
Right, completely. You know, it makes people do things like do steroids in order to be able to, you know, win every contest or do some fantastic thing that's just completely – and these people, like I think of people who get in order to be perfect physically, they will get so much plastic surgery done that they end up looking like gargoyles, right? In the search for perfection, they end up mauling themselves.
Well, and it's bizarre. I mean, it is
bizarre.
It's a twisted thing.
Yeah.
All right.
So nobody bats 1,000, right?
And nobody goes through life undefeated.
Yeah. And so the reality is there's going to be some amount of failure. In fact, failures are a way that we know that some of the things that we tried, they don't work, so we got them out of the way. We're always looking for the answer, and the answer is in front of all these failures. So we got to keep going. That's just part of it.
Right, which is what we're going to do. You guys, this is the good news on Glenn Klein Online, Chris Harrington's Reality. If you want to chime in, this is kind of... Well, it is what it is tonight. I mean,
it is what it is. That's right.
1-800-436-3260. I know people are listening live right now. People are listening live. If you got stuff you want to ask or comment on, 1-800-436-3260. I'm going to get into it with Chris right now. 1-800-436-3260, or that's in North America toll free, or all over the world, 813-425-5773, the 5773, the very handsome Sean O'Halloran, waiting to take your calls. 813-425-5773. All right, homeboy. All right, you go. Go ahead.
All right. So what we've been talking about is taking responsibility. But I want to take responsibility at every level of my humanity, not just financially, but my mind, my emotions, my spiritual life, my physical life, you know, getting in shape. Being healthy, healthy-minded, healthy emotions, all right? And I believe that the place to start is always with your emotions. The reason for that is that if you look at how people communicate and how they receive information, the emotional stuff starts happening at about 200 milliseconds, and the mental stuff starts happening at about 600 milliseconds. So you've got... half a second there, that's just pure emotion before things start getting rocking and rolling.
You realize that is completely contradictory to what has been taught on Wednesday nights for the better part of 7 years.
I can't help that.
All right. Because what's been helped is that it is the thought first or the mental first, which the emotions follow. You're saying the emotion first, which leads...
Yeah, I'm saying that what happens mentally is that we rationalize our own feelings.
You're going to have to explain that a little better to me.
Well, how I feel about things, right, my emotional state, then starts projecting itself into the world, and I've got to figure out ways to communicate that, so I start creating sentences that are built on thoughts I have that are like trial balloons. You know, like in a cartoon, and you have these little balloons that pop up?
Right.
First you have the people there, and then you have the balloons, right? You don't have balloons sitting in midair with no people there. Somebody's got to say that. So you've got the emotional person that's there, and they pop up this balloon in order to explain how they feel.
Yeah, but what about, you're talking about creating a rationalization from the emotion that we're experiencing.
Yeah.
But what about taking on other thoughts that are, well, they're part of us, but they seem separate from us, like the thought of all worthy, the gospel, everyone perfect, everyone righteous, everyone
right.
sinless. That is not our thought. That was a God thought, if you will.
Yeah, unconditionality is that way, isn't it?
Right.
It's pervasive.
Right. We take that unconditionality, right. and we allow that to influence our emotions. What about that?
It is our honest, real, and healthy, natural state of being. If you think about it, right, how Adam dealt with the whole problem about being naked, right? He all of a sudden just launched in this whole thing of, I'm going to need to fix this because, so he went and got a fig leaf.
Yes.
And God's like, well, what's up?
I'm naked.
Fashion statement. What's up?
Yeah, I'm naked.
You know?
And God says, so who told you you were naked?
Yeah. Yeah.
Nobody had to tell him.
Nobody had to tell him, that's right.
No.
He knew it, right?
Yep.
How did he know?
Because he felt guilt for the first time.
He felt guilt, that's right.
Guilt sucks.
Yeah, guilt sucks, that's right. But in the new paradigm, right, in the second chapter of the realm of spirituality, all right, chapter 2,
yes.
There's no guilt and there's no shame. You know why? It's all good. We're all worthy. It's not about us, so we don't have to prove anything. It's already been proven because we're bought with a price. It's not about me. I don't have to defend it. It's perfectly okay. I just want to be a little bit more effective at being able to communicate it. It's so great, I can't help it. I can't help myself. I want to learn to be an effective communicator about the gospel. Alrighty.
And so for those of us, which are obviously many, because, well, I mean, just on this level in the United States, there's 23 million plus people unemployed, for example, that are struggling, that are not being
yeah.
effective just in that one area of communication,
yeah.
of being able to provide and help their family, which, of course, a family is a mini micro society in and of itself.
Sure.
And then you extrapolate that of people that are not being effective in their other forms of community. What do you say to them?
Well, you know, the problem areas are ones that overlap quite a bit. And to me, it always gets down to what's the central line or the central point of that overlap. You know, there's a concept called fuzzy logic. And what it does is it explains how things overall make a central subject matter. And they do it by overlapping, 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 until finally, if you look at the place that's the thickest, the part that has the most overlap, it'll show you what the real subject matter is. Okay? And so with human beings, the real subject matter is, can you get over yourself? Can you stop being self-righteous? Can you allow that this is being provided for you and that you are, in fact, in a passive position?
Right,
the universe is provided. The earth is provided. Everything around you is provided. And so instead of you're owning it, right? Now, I know this really flies in the face of a lot of politics and economics, but instead of you're owning it, the fact of the matter is, to really own it, right, to own the fact of who you are and your own being, is to see yourself as a part of everything that is. It's not about you. You don't get to take it with you. You didn't bring it, and you don't get to take it with you. What happens is that you share that with everybody. We're all here breathing the same air. We're all living in the same dirt. We're all drinking from the same ocean. We're all getting the same rain. So what one guy does affects everybody else on the planet. We're all interdependently related, and we can't do anything about that. And no matter how much you try to put up a gate or put up a house or put up a fence or put up some kind of a fortress, the reality is that ultimately we're all interrelated. You can't get around it. And so the humility of real humanity is that I see the other people around me as me too. That radical inclusionism that I'm talking about is, instead of my saying there's me and then they got these other people over here, there's me and that's me and this is me and that's me and that's me. They're all me.
Why do people cut themselves off from other people who were
a really good question.
Yeah, I mean,
it's a really good question. You're asking one of the $64,000 questions. You know, why is there something rather than nothing is the big one in science, and I think in psychology, you know, why is it that people separate themselves out? You know, separation anxiety has been driven into us, and at the same time, there's no separation. And when you take people and you segregate them from each other and, like, put them in administrative seg in prison, those people, they can lose their minds because we're social animals. We've got to have some amount of real intimate behavior. And when that breaks down, then you have people that get sick.
Right. But even when people cut themselves off from each other, those people that are cut off still have other social, generally speaking, have other social interactions.
Yeah, so I'll miss you. Bye. Don't let the door hit you on your butt.
All right. So, but why do people, is it, I'll say it this way. How much of a factor is it that when people cut other people off, they think that they have nothing more to offer that other person?
Yeah, that's a really big question. What in the world drives people to think that they're better than someone else? I mean, really, seriously. You know, on the planetary scale, do you think that if an asteroid was going to hit the planet, we'd go, oh, well, no, I can't hit Chris. He's such a great guy. I mean, you know, let's skip this part of the planet and we'll just blow off the western side. Oh, that's the part where he is.
Right. And getting back to your Will Smith and Independence Day analogy, if a person who would have normally in a normal situation cut themselves off from that other person because I don't need them anymore, they're not being productive, if they would have thought that person could actually keep them alive, they might not be so quick to cut them off.
That's right.
All right. So
if I'm at war, for example, and I don't really like gays, and the guy next to me, he has a rifle, he's gay, he could shoot the sharpshooter who's trying to assassinate me, but I would not want to be saved by a gay guy. Go ahead and shoot me. Imagine that that's your rationalization. Some people actually think that way, though.
Well,
they really do. Seriously. I'd rather be dead than saved by a gay guy.
Better red than dead.
Yeah, there you go.
I mean better dead than red. That's what it was.
Yeah,
better
I got gotcha. So we went through the summary, and I wanted to introduce something new. How much time do we have?
No, we've got a few minutes, and I wanted to just turn it basically back over to you so that you feel
completely.
Well,
how much time do we have? About 20 minutes?
No, about 10 minutes.
About 10 minutes. Okay, yeah. I can do that.
Or less. Go.
I have an app for that. I can do it.
I have an app.
I want to talk about a personal, emotional, daily budget. We've been talking about you're having a list of things to do, and I know that you feel overwhelmed.
Dude, you're wait a minute. You're going to add something more to me right now?
Of course.
Jesus
Every
Christ.
Week, something new is going to come your way.
You are kicking my ass.
I am kicking your ass. That's right.
I appreciate it.
It's so cute. Here we go. Personal, emotional, daily budget. But I want to use the illustration from last time that looked like a clock, right? And it had five sections in it, really. But I'll go over those. For those people who want to see what it looks like, I posted it on my Facebook page.
I saw that. It's actually a pie chart more than a clock.
It's a pie chart. That's right. So if you had 6 hours of sleep and 6 hours of work and 6 hours of chores, and then in the last 6 hours you had your vices and your essential 1,000 words of intimacy, that would take up your 24 hours, right?
Yes.
So I want to talk about each one of those for a minute. Let's just take 2 minutes for each one of those. If you're talking about your sleep area, what time are you going to go to bed and what time are you going to wake up? Now, if you look at it from that standpoint, you can predict how much sleep you're going to get, right?
Pretty much. Other than the night that your daughter gets arrested. But
I think that there are always going to be emergencies. But, again, we're looking on average. On average, how much sleep are we going to get? So some people would say, like for me, I get like 4 to 6 hours of sleep a night. Some people, like my wife, if she doesn't get 8 hours of sleep, she's like the next day she's like a zombie. So
Glenda sleeps for 8 hours.
And if she can get more 10 hours, she would be happy with 10 hours.
God bless her.
She's like a cat. She can do it. I have a brother who can sleep 12 or 15 hours. He's like really good at it.
How long do you sleep for, Sean? Six. 6
so
hours.
There you go.
Before I had my CPAP machine,
I was getting about 3.5 hours of sleep for about 15 years. And now with my CPAP machine, I've got about 5.5 hours.
Right on.
So I'm doing great compared to what I used to do. Okay. Let's move on to the next one. So in the next 6 hours where you're doing your job, you know, your life work, and you're getting your money together, you're being proactive, working on things and making sure you're taking care of your business, what 5 things will you do today to make sure that you are working on not going bankrupt?
Yeah, that's a good
Now, point. I think a lot of people will go, you know, like during the summer, teachers would be off during the summer. Some teachers would work all summer long at a second job, mm-hmm. or they'd teach summer school. Mm-hmm. But some teachers would just hang out, mm-hmm. and they would watch TV all day and goof off and do that. Then they'd come back fully rested, did their thing, and it's all good. And I appreciate that. But for me, for myself, I was always working on my next project, whatever it was. I had things that I'd saved up during the year. I always make objects to sell because I just wanted to make sure I had a way to make a living. If teaching gave out, I always had something else in the hopper. All right? So I'm asking that question of you, though. What are you doing on a daily basis, at least 6 hours a day, where you're working on average to make sure that you're making the connections and the networking that you need to do in order to secure your future?
And what kind of budget is this called again?
This is called the personal emotional daily budget.
And why is 6 hours of sleep, 6 hours of...
One fourth.
No, hold on. But why is it an emotional budget?
Ah, that's the kicker, okay? The thing is that you have to keep it emotionally in mind. That is, you're asking yourself, why do I need to do this? It's not because you need the money. You get the money because you do it, but that's not why you do it. You do it because you want to make sure that you stay on an even keel. I think part of the issue is that you have looked at things from a question that is different than the one I'm asking. I'm asking about your emotional balance, not your balance sheet.
Dude, that is totally true.
Okay.
That is totally true.
Can you go there?
Totally.
Yeah. Let's move on. We're going to run out of time.
Go.
Number 3, the 6 hours where you're doing your chores, your upkeep, your maintaining, your contacts, your family. What 5 things will you do today to ensure that you are maintaining your family security and organization? Why? Because you need that emotional connectedness in order to make sure that you're staying in check in your humanity. If you don't do that, you can't get the feedback from the people in your family who could say, Dad, we need you to attend to this little thing over here, or you're not quite meeting this need over here, or I see that you're off balance on doing this thing over here. They can help check you before you wreck you.
All right, what's the next one?
All right, last one. Here we go. Limit or modify your vices in order to ensure that you have enough time to provide your intimate partner with 1,000 essential words. Now, I know that being in a relationship is a very necessary thing to you. You like it. You like being in a relationship.
Well, there's necessary and enjoying it. Yes, there's two things.
There's
it's necessary and that I enjoy it. Those are two different concepts.
Yeah, that's the and.
Necessary and enjoyable.
Yeah.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah,
I'm conjoining those simply because of this. I'm watching your behavior, and I'm looking at the language that you use, and the language that you use in daily basis and online, and when you're meeting with it, you have a lot of innuendo in there. Now, the only reason that you have that innuendo is that you're attempting to get an emotional response. Now, I doubt that you're coming on to me. I'm an attractive man. I know it's difficult, but you got to keep yourself in check, buddy. I'm already ticking. You can hear that, right?
You are kind of sexy.
Yeah.
All right, hold on for a second.
You're doing that in order to, like, you're flaring out. Hey, what do you think, baby?
Hold on for a second, okay?
What?
Only yeah. You only need 1,000 words for that intimate relationship?
Yeah, a day.
Really?
Yeah.
That doesn't seem like many.
It doesn't seem like much. But it's a minimum of 5 sentences in each of these 4 areas to make sure that you are taking care of business. But the thing is, it can't be a and an O or a whatever. It's got to be something that is really, 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 really pointed so that you're communicating on the high school basis. Remember, you're talking about how you feel, how the other person feels, right? What you need to do, what the other person needs to do, and, I mean, what the other person did today and what you did today. And all that does is it puts a historic documentation on how the day was, and it projects ahead that tomorrow you're still going to be there. I still do love you. Do you still love me? Are we still a team? Are we still on the same page? Is there something that I need to do to correct things? If this is going kind of great and you're liking it okay, let's move on to the next thing, which is we're probably going to have some fun here.
Do you have this on Word, on your Microsoft Word?
You mean is the program on Word?
No, the thing that you just can you post that on the Good News Friends?
Yeah, I can do it there. I'll put on Good News, but it's also on my you can get it directly off of my Facebook page.
Which is just it's Chris Harrington, right?
Yeah, Chris Harrington, Facebook, Chris Harrington.
HERRINGTON. It'll also be on the Good News.
In fact, if you go on my wall pictures, right, you can see there are probably about 40 or 50 of these things on there. Because in mediating with people over the years, I've made probably, I don't know, 300 or 400 of these things. And there are many lessons on all these different ideas. There are plenty of them in there, and you're welcome to them. All you have to do is go to the top of it, and you can copy it and select it. Put on your computer and spit it out.
That's our intermediator, Chris Harrington, ladies and gentlemen, available for help for you too, not just for me. And you can contact him on Facebook and Running Turtle 87.
My business card is right there with all my numbers.
That is a beautiful thing. One of the great things, Chris, that you said earlier on was that there was only 0.25 seconds in between people that finished in fourth place.
Yeah.
And people that finish in the gold. But I feel like this is a great hope for me. I think I just need to make some of these adjustments, and then I actually might.
And it doesn't take much, Glenn. That's the deal. If you and I are being chased by a bear, I don't have to outrun the bear. I only have to outrun you. You understand what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah. Yes, I do.
So
brother.
I practice running all the time.
All right.
You are going to get smoked, buddy.
Well, I am a Bears fan, you know. But that's for another time. Chris, thank you. We'll do it again next week, hopefully. Until next time, thank you, Sean. Thank you guys for listening. This is Glenn Klein Online saying shalom, everybody.